Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and we are still in day, 637?
Oh yeah, I feel like Robinson Crusoe at the moment. I'm walking along that beach and I'm seeing footprints and going, was I fucking here before?
And where is Friday?
Speaking of Good Man Friday, we're delighted to be joined in the Tortoise Shack by our old friend, Simon McGarr. Simon, thanks for coming over.
No, thanks for having me along. Thanks a million.
It's, first of all, I'm going to start. Simon, you've been writing a daily commentary on your little piece, and it's literally, a two-minute read?
It's a newsletter. It lasts for 3 to 4 paragraphs, and I aim never to go longer than 450 words so that people kind of can catch up on anything that happened. And then they can stop thinking about it.
And we have to be honest, all of Martin's commentary that he uses on these podcasts, he just basically lifts copies and pastes from there.
Yeah, so. Well, I have to know, in honesty, I read it and I go, Simon's dead right about that. No, Simon's absolutely wrong about that.
That's better engagement than I could imagine. That's two engagements. That's for the price of one. It's been really good fun. And actually, I'm here because I have been writing the commentary, which is, you know, you do it every day. And I don't need to, like, nobody's asked me for it. Hmm. No, nobody's paying me for it. Nobody wants it except the people who subscribed, and good on them. But for me, it was my way of engaging with, the electoral process, the excitement of an election, which is very exciting always. As a voter, that's all it is. It's a way for me to try and process it, as a voter. And it helps me to sort of reflect on the things that happened in the day at the end of the day. And if it helps other people, brilliant. Or if it drives them mad, also brilliant.
But it's wry. It is wry. And I think that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, I would say that's fair. I mean, also by the time you're writing it, by definition, it's the end of the day. And therefore you're a bit tired and perhaps not at the very hail of your mental health. And so you're kind of thinking, again, I've got another day again here. Yeah. But in truth, there have been a couple of days where things sort of clarified, like there's an awful lot of mush. And I think that the reason that I wanted to come in and have a chat with you was that I kind of feel like I have only one idea out of the election campaign, but your one idea is better than none.
Yeah.
So the idea is that I don't know that the things that have happened have been properly understood, and we might accidentally draw the wrong conclusions from them if we don't understand why they happened. So, for example, there are two big stories out of the election. Maybe three. So the first story is Sinn Féin up, which is a thing that we have never seen to the extent that we're seeing it at the moment in the polls, and we'll see how that goes later on. But in the polls, and we take it for granted that we've now had three polls all broadly congruent with each other showing Sinn Féin on the rise. Whether it's head-to-head with Fianna Fáil, or whether it's a little bit ahead, we're basically in the margin of error.
Yeah.
The other story has been Fine Gael, like, melting.
Tanking.
Melting.
Yeah.
And that seems like something that we can say here now, but that was not the conventional wisdom as to what this election was about and how it would run. And I wanted to come back to that in a second. And the third story is the story it hasn't been, which is the question of climate change.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that that's going to be a major problem in the formation of the next government and certainly in the running of the next government, because there will be people for whom climate change is the big issue. And like everybody, we look at it, you know, climate change, and we say we're very interested in that. I'm very interested in that. I think it's a very big issue. And then someone runs into the room with a piece of tinfoil on a stick and waves it at me, and I'm distracted from the time it takes to look at the exciting shiny paper on a stick. And then I look back again to my major issue. And I think we're currently in shiny paper on a stick territory. And I feel that that's something that the attention will revert to. And then people are going to be a bit annoyed if they don't see action on it. Like, this is genuinely going to be the thing that matters long term. And so if it's not going to be the thing that matters this year, it has to matter twice as much next year. Like, we're building up an awful lot of what's known as technical debt in the software world, where you say, sure, we'll fix that later. Mm. Until eventually it's so hard to fix, you go, oh, Jesus, it's too late. We should have fixed it before. And okay, obviously we've 40 years of that. But still in all, I do think that this is going to be a big issue. So that's kind of the dog that didn't bark. Mm. So let's have a look at, what do you think, Sinn Féin or Fine Gael? Which is the more interesting first story? I think Fine Gael.
Yes.
Because that's the first thing to happen.
Well, if you look, 3 months ago, Leo Varadkar was going to go snap election to the country.
He had
going to romp home.
He had Berkey levels. No Taoiseach had been as popular as him and before, since Bertie Ahern was at his absolute peak, you know, wandering around as the man who had brought peace on the island and all of the Good Friday Agreement, all of these things. And Leo Varadkar's satisfaction rating with him personally was at an all-time high. Every time we opened a British newspaper or we saw a commentary, they were kicking him. And we were like going, okay, he may not be perfect, but he's ours. Leave him alone. Fine Gael were getting away with it because people were...
See, the thing is that people are very busy.
Mm. Yeah.
And we actually, until election things start, the general populace, by which I do not include the lunatics who are sitting in this small room, the general populace don't worry too much about what somebody else's job is. And the someone else's job is run the government.
Yeah.
And only when the government fails to run satisfactorily do they worry about what's going on there. Like, if the government continuously provided for people in a way that made them not annoyed, you know, we'd still have the same government elected year after year. That's why Sweden has had something like 70 years of the same flipping party.
That's why Fine Gael, that's why Fianna Fáil have been in government more often than Fine Gael. Fianna Fáil always had the sense to leave ordinary bloke with the price of a few pints on a Friday night.
I mean, I think a useful way of thinking about Fianna Fáil traditionally, and there has been a big historical break at the collapse, the financial collapse, and perhaps it has the same name, but it's not the same party in terms of its place in society. Mm. But traditionally, the purpose of Fianna Fáil was as a patronage machine.
Yes.
You could sign up to the patronage machine, you contributed to the efforts of the machine, you oiled the wheels, and the machine delivered goodies out the other side for the people who put the goodies in at the front. The goodies were not, I'm not describing corruption there, I'm describing how patronage machines work, that there's benefits in relation to networking, yep, social opportunities. You know, these aren't unusual things. So that's Fianna Fáil's place. And they were a machine for delivering people, you know, kind of contentment with their lot, whether or not everybody else was content. It was a machine for delivering that. And that was what it was designed for over years. What Fine Gael, and I think the magical moment for Fine Gael, although, you know, people will look back on it and they'll go, I don't understand how that could make the difference. But weirdly, it was the commemoration point.
Mm.
I don't know of any worse method of kicking off your election campaign after you've played the part of national champion in a Brexit kind of circumstance to deliver a celebration of, and you see people were saying a celebration of the Black and Tans, a celebration of the RIC. I don't think that's what they were thinking about. And I think the fact that it was held at Dublin Castle and that the current Garda Síochána, you know, the commissioner was to be part of the thing. Really what you're looking at there is a celebration of state power.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter whether the state power, even state violence, as the RIC and the Black and Tans involvement would have it. It doesn't matter what the state was. I mean, it was a colonial state. The Fine Gael impulse was to identify with the state.
Mm.
If you go to the public and say, we are the state, you're gambling that the public goes, I love the state. Fantastic. Jesus, those lads are brilliant, the state. And if people aren't happy with their lives, and if they feel the state has not done what they're doing, you've now lashed yourself to the state and all its decisions. And I know people go, oh, you know, they've been the government and so... They've been able to, you know, they've got to accept that they've responsibility. But look, to be honest, most of the state functions like the human body. Almost all of it is automatic. Like, it just does stuff and you're not thinking about it. Nobody sits there going, must move blood through this vein now, thinking hard about it. It doesn't happen. It just works. And there's only a tiny little bit up at the top of the executive function. And the state is the same. There's a government at the top, which is elected. And there's a chunk of people who are basically the one layer from the elected government.
Yes.
And they're the bits of the state that control the automatic systems.
Mm-hmm.
And either the government says, that's brilliant, let's do more of this. Or it says, oh, do you know, we should change what we're doing and maybe do something different. And the thing is, if you identify with those institutions, as opposed to the electorate, If you identify with the institutions, you support the institutions when they take action contrary to the benefit or contrary to the things that are good for the electorate.
Simon, they did that when they identified as one of the during the era of the strategic communications unit, if you recall, they decided that a lot of the branding they would do on Fine Gael literature would be replaced with "brought to you by the Government of Ireland," and they made themselves that. They actually said, "We are Government of Ireland TM."
And what people would say at the time was, that's very bad because the government symbols and the state symbols are being co-opted by Fine Gael.
Yeah.
But I think what has happened in this election is the Fine Gael were co-opted by the state and they become the embodiment of the state's behaviour. Mm. And so whenever you met an automatic, you know, functioning of the state kind of experience and you were unhappy with it, Fine Gael told you that was them.
Yeah.
We did that. That was us. And would you like more of it? And the offer to offer more of this, more of the same, has been the Fine Gael offer.
As you said, and I've said this all along, Fine Gael's captured by that layer, that second layer. They're captured. And there is a marked difference between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Fianna Fáil always knew how to run departments. Fine Gael are getting run by their departments.
Yeah, and I definitely have seen that in relation to Regina Doherty's becoming the spokes minister for the Secretary General's decision making in respect of the public services card. I actually am very careful generally not to ascribe things to the minister in that department, because I don't think the minister is making any decisions in relation to this. You might as well ascribe it to the press secretary. That's not who the person who's making the decisions is. You ascribe it to the department. And I think if you say that, you've got closer to the heart of where the decisions are being made. So, you know, definitely we've seen that. And what are we also seeing? We've also seen that minister in particular, who has been vociferous in the defence of the institution to which she has been assigned. And you'll see a strange kind of thought process there where you're now that institution's, as opposed to the institution is, you're in charge of it. You've now become its figurehead, so to speak. The result is that she's now looking at losing her seat, not just losing the...
Which is a huge...
That's a ministerial seat. Like, that's a significant ministerial seat. And again, there's almost no larger automatic system in the state than the welfare system. Yeah. And lots of somebodies have not liked how it's being represented by the person who's elected to control it, to make decisions and set policy. I don't know if there was ever a policy that was set by Regina Doherty that didn't feel like it just came out of the department's general impulses and instincts. You know, there was never anything that seemed different to what the department would do if you just left it running on autopilot.
On its own, yes. Yeah.
If we take that, then the counter argument has to be that Sinn Féin aren't the Sinn Féin rise is not seen as this great left-wing hope. It's more so, well, actually, you're not the state.
Well, look, here's the thing. I mean, you've always had a discussion. It's a boring old chestnut that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael would never go into coalition with each other. Mm. To do so would be to destroy them, because it would mean that they wouldn't be able to play up differences between them as the basis of I'm in opposition, you're in
they
government.
They can't do Punch and Judy.
Yeah, and they can't do that. And what has happened is that nobody has seen the last 5 years as anything except a Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael government. Mm. And if you take it being the case that the public say, I want some change, or perhaps I demand something to change, and they look at their options, Sinn Féin is the next largest party.
It's the vehicle.
That's the machine that the public, the electorate, whose agency is always downplayed when it comes to these kind of things. I mean, the public is treated like it's a branch of fluid dynamics, where you do this and it sloshes one way, and then if you put up a particular kind of experience or baffle, it'll slosh the other way. People make decisions and they're independently making their own decisions all the time. And the magic is that millions of these independent decisions coalesce into something which reflects the public will. It's almost a kind of magic. I mean, that's the wonder of a democratic election, particularly one so attuned as the PR, the STV PR system allows it to be. But, I mean, if you look then, so basically, is Sinn Féin the flip side of Fine Gael losing their votes? Well, no, not really. Very few people go to themselves, well, I used to be voting Fine Gael, but it's Sinn Féin for me now today.
Very few.
It's a very big jump. Do you know what I mean? And yet, you know, the two seem to go up and down. And I think what it is at the danger of sounding like fluid dynamics myself, the votes flow along. People make a decision where they say, I know, I really want to change. Mm. And the thing is, traditionally, if you wanted to change out of your Fine Gael government, a form of government which, up until the implosion of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael could literally never, in the history of the state, persuade anyone to do twice.
Yes.
No one wanted another go at it.
But it's a good question. Why?
I think what happens is that you give people a run out. Mm. They experience what it means to have a government which identifies with the state. And they say, I'm not sure I want more of that. Mm. Now, let's imagine that all the previous occasions where that happened, what happens is that you just go down and you say, so we'll go back and put the other fellas in. And if you look at the Ipsos MRBI poll data history, they have a particularly interesting chart, kind of a chilling chart for me, where all the years where I was growing up in the 1980s and all the way back into the state, as far back as the survey goes, they have a line that shows what's the combined vote of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And that line rarely dips below 70%, and sometimes it goes as far as 85%. Now, can't conceive of that world as being the norm for decade after decade. Mm-hmm. That's why I say Fianna Fáil as it stands now is not the same party, because the force of power of knowledge that this party will be back again in a minute. Mm. It's only just a little interruption and they'll be back in power in a minute. The force of that knowledge is enormous in affecting everybody's behaviour in relation to a political party. And that's gone.
That narrative is gone.
That it is gone. The thing is that we don't really have a coherent alternative one.
Mm.
Isn't that right? Isn't it the case that there isn't a coherent alternative narrative?
I think there is an incoherent alternative narrative. I think that's fair to say. It's not that there is no narrative. It's just not joined up thinking.
Well, yes. And there are bits of it where you think, oh, how does these, you know, this is a jigsaw full of baked beans and this piece is from a jigsaw made of Peppa Pig. I don't see how these two go together. Mm. And yet I meant to jam them together. So there are bits that don't seem to fit in the alternative narrative. Like, Sinn Féin don't have enough candidates to sweep the board.
Mm-hmm.
But even if Sinn Féin had run three candidates in every constituency, sure, they'd get more. But we're still not in the world of overall majorities of the past. Mm. That's never happening. Because the state is filled with a far more diverse population. And, you know, you'd almost say, people complain about things about being identity politics.
Yes.
But I mean, what has Ireland been but a form of identity politics in the sense that the personalities, the life experiences, but the personalities, the economic circumstances, the impulses, those knee-jerk impulses are reflected in people's political party choices, but also the political parties reflected personality types.
Yeah.
You know, they really did. And now we have more kinds of people because we have a more sophisticated society.
Well,
sophisticated being being used there in terms of complexity,
yeah,
but also in terms of that there's more space for different kinds of people in the society to be acknowledged.
Think of what the Taoiseach said 2 days ago about there being no room for class in Irish politics and let's not have that. And my first immediate thought to that was, well, actually, politics should reflect the electorate, and the electorate should represent, there is class and there's gender and there's race and there's sexuality. All of these things should be more reflective in our politics and are starting to be. I do think these things are starting to see them back. But what when you look at it in terms of identity politics now, and it is true that there is still.
But our identity is not like, you see, the thing is that this is a phrase that comes out of the United States.
Yes.
Where, you know, the identities are so well defined that there's groups for each one of them. Here, they wore a hat that said, you know, now you can have a party that is good for you if you like being the chair of the neighborhood watch.
Yeah.
And you enjoy checking out whether people have put their bins away into their little bin holder. Are you that kind of person? There's a party for you. There's a party for you if you are, you know, you work in higher education and you're kind of worried about the way things are going. But at the same time, you also, you know, you like your bike to work. And then when you get there, you know, you also like the fact that there's a nice subsidized canteen and you think everything should carry on much the same as they are now, but a bit better. There's a personality type who says, I want to have a fight every day. I just want to have a fight, you know? I just want to have a row. And not looking at anyone in particular here. I just want to have a row with someone. And there's a party for you here now that these are kind of who people are, but they're not obvious from the outside in respect of those things, so that we don't break down in terms of race and gender identities. And yet these are genuine personality types that the country holds. And there are parties that you would recognize for each one of those people.
Yep.
I mean, you can complain to me, oh, those are just a bunch of stereotypes, but I'm not deriving the stereotype from the party. It's like the parties are derived from the types.
Well, I think particularly Leo Varadkar embodies that, in that he ticks a lot of boxes, but the box most importantly to tick, he doesn't tick. And that's being relatable. He's not relatable for the vast, vast majority of people in the country, because they are quite out there on the right. And Leo, as one of them, is further out than most of them.
I mean, I think that that's a way of thinking about political relationships and social relationships that fits into the realm of political science, but isn't necessarily how people think about things. I think if you go out and look, and I'll tell you where you see it. You see it in the magical world where people say that I can't stand that party, but I'm going to vote for the local candidate.
Yeah.
And they do that because they like the person.
Yeah.
And similarly, you'll see it when you run candidates, parties run multiple candidates, and people go, well, I'm voting for him, and I will never vote for him.
Yeah,
this guy here isn't ever getting a vote. They're the same party, but you're like, no way, never. And, you know, that will happen as well in respect of voters. What is that reflecting? It's not reflecting where you are on the left-right spectrum, which is kind of is there in terms of our relationship to each other and questions about progress, which an idea which I have very great difficulties with, because I'm against the idea of people saying, you know, I'm a progressive. And that makes me chew my nails a bit and I'm a bit worried, because it's born out of a concept of things having an end point that we're moving towards.
Yeah.
There's a natural end to, this is called in history, it's called the Whiggish version of history.
Yep.
Things are going to improve in a particular direction. And therefore there's an end point which we can stop and history ends because we've done all the things on the checklist of history. I don't think that there's such a thing as social progress. I think there's such a thing as social improvement.
Social mobility.
Things can get better, things can get worse. But the thing is, things can get worse.
Mm, yeah.
You're not always moving forward. It's just one damn thing after another.
And things
there's
can get
no defined end point at all. And the thing is, if you think there's such a thing, what happens is that you bank what has been achieved. And then you think, well, then we'll move on to the next thing. But that's going to get eaten if it's not looked after. Like, it gets a lot harder.
But then
the more achievements you're trying to protect.
Drill down into that though for a minute and then say, well, what's happened is that we've looked around, we've seen where we are, and we've noticed that, you know, the housing thing doesn't make sense, the health service thing doesn't make sense, none of this actual makes sense in terms of an economy that is, we're told is rapidly the fastest growing in the EU, blah 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 blah, take all, you know, we're nearing full employment, highest number of people at work, biggest tax take in the history of the state, and people are looking around and their lived experience are going, well, actually, whether it's left or right, or you want to believe in any of that ideological thing, they could say, well, actually, housing would be something. It's not working.
You see, this is the thing. What if you build a machine that has two valves and you don't like where either of them lead? And that's what I think we're dealing with here. This is an election where pressure has built up in the system and people aren't willing to go through either of the two traditional routes. You can have more of the same, or you can have... And suddenly they realise, well, the other valve marked Fianna Fáil, which was the traditional release for frustration with a Fine Gael government, they don't want that either. Now, that's never happened. That's never happened. That's the change.
But it was coming for a long time. their share of the vote has been dropping consistently.
Their combined share
of
the vote
has been dropping consistently. And when we were looking at polls all through the year, I kept saying this. I kept saying 49.8%, they will be lower. If you get to 45%, then it's game on for real change.
But the thing is, that takes us to Sinn Féin.
Yeah.
Because the question is, well, okay, people have just decided they want to have change and they only have two valves. And they're like drilling a hole in the pressure boiler that has never been there before.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to put a Sinn Féin valve in. And I have no idea what that will look like. I'd be spoofing it if I did. I have no idea what Sinn Féin in government would be like or will do. It will not look like Sinn Féin in government in Northern Ireland.
Much more centrist than people think.
I mean, the thing is that if you walk in through the doors of any department as the minister, you better bring somebody with you who knows what the hell it's like inside there, or you'll just get eaten by the department.
Yeah.
And that's the difficulty. It's very easy. I mean, there's a famous section in Fergus Finlay's book on negotiating with Fianna Fáil to do the first Fianna Fáil Labour coalition. And what he says is that he went in and he realised after a couple of things, they would just sit there and Labour would put forward all their ideas and their proposals and things they wanted to put in the programme for government. And the Fianna Fáilers would just sit there and go, thanks for that. And they'd collect them off the table and they'd go away and they'd come back the next day with big long reams of counter-arguments and examples of why a thing couldn't be done. And it took them a couple of days to realise the fellas all across the table weren't who they were negotiating with.
Yeah,
it was the civil servants back in the department that they were negotiating with. Because the fellas just went back and said, what do we say to that? But look, any government that comes out of the current system where people have drilled a third hole, we have a Sinn Féin that's almost like there's so little risk in voting for Sinn Féin. Because there's no chance of overshooting and accidentally giving them too many people or whatever you felt like because it's the first go out.
Mm.
There's no risk. Whether you think that that's going to be the defining outcome, you still end up with the same three cards on the table and you're moving them around trying to find which one of these is the one that I need. We've got three cards instead of two. Three cards instead of two is a complete change of system.
Sinn Féin aren't running enough seats to get a majority. They're not running enough seats to get government without a fairly substantial coalition government. So if you, as you've said, it is the safe vote. If you vote Sinn Féin, you're basically voting against the hegemony.
And now I'd like to go for the last bit, the one where we said the dogs that didn't bark.
Yeah.
So I said it was climate change. But really the question is, why Sinn Féin and why not for people to go to the things that they kind of know? Why not Greens, which were pegged as going to be the beneficiaries of the big push? Well, why not, you know, Labour? Why not the Social Democrats? Why not the People Before Profit if you want to go radical? You know, those are choices that are available. We don't have a two-party system. You can vote for a minority party. And you can still express his preferences down below as well.
But are we not seeing that the reason why you go for these things now is that, okay, we talked about the big issues. So let's put people up front. There's not one leader of a political party who wouldn't swap their housing spokesperson for Owen O'Brien in the morning. And in terms of housing, across the board, people do think he's a serious player who knows what he's talking about. Nonetheless, taking that aside, there's also an element of when you're saying you have nothing to lose, you want to take a chance, and we've seen literally, you have to be honest, large elements of the media have been kicking Sinn Féin for a very long time. And eventually people have that reaction, whether we want to draw it or not. It is fair to say to people, go, we're tired of that. Why do they keep kicking this person?
Well, I mean, I suppose if everybody says don't press the big red button, eventually people are going to go, I have to press the big red button and see what happens.
Yes.
And if you put a really big sign saying with an arrow saying, not this button, don't press this button, what other button is everyone going to be looking at?
Yeah.
And that, I mean, there might be an element of that. And for years, you know, more and more signs with more arrows have been pointing at the big red button going, careful now, dangerous button, who knows what it could do?
Yeah.
And if you kind of say to yourself, I suppose, well, you know, I really want something different and there's this big red button over there that I've been looking at. I don't know. I mean, I should say, Sinn Féin aren't going to get one of the high preferences from me, right? That's my preference. But at the same time, this is an earthquake. And imagine
that's exactly what it is.
Imagine you've built a system that relies on swapping between two parties. Ignore the coalition partners. Mm. Forget it. Imagine it swapsies between two parties for the thing. And one party gets, 10 years and the other party gets 4 years and then another party gets 10 years. That's the machine that we have. Okay. And then we don't have that machine, which we don't. And I don't see any sign that it's coming back. If that happens, we now have something that we literally don't have a society built to handle, a three-way system of power where there are three choices. And you can argue about which choice you like and which choice you don't like, but we don't have a system for doing that. So either two things happen. Either the society alters to try and find this, we have two corners, we have three corners to work with, we're all working in a triangle of power choices. Okay, that could happen. Or much more likely, it collapses one of the pairs into another one to return it to a two swapsies choice.
Mm. And that's what's going to happen.
That's what you think. I literally don't know. Like, just as I don't know what would Sinn Féin look like in government, I suspect it would look an awful lot like Fianna Fáil. I suspect it would look like a government which is both taking the advice of its civil servants as to how to run the state and not break it. I genuinely think, I don't, like you say, there's a lot of competence there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of competence. And one of the elements of competence is that you don't just go in, rip out all the wires and say, we'll find out what they did after the place comes apart.
They're not going to go in and do Syriza and say, turn it all off and flip it over.
No. This is going to be people who are coming in to take the levers of power. Mm. They're not going to burn the levers. They're going to see how they work.
And there's an exceptional pressure on them if they do come in. I mean exceptional pressure to perform.
So there's the other thing, and that's kind of the other issue. Fine Gael go in and they just say, what's our policies? And they get told. But for Fianna Fáil, they came in and they said, we need to look after these things.
Yeah.
And, okay, there's a bunch of other stuff you need to do to make sure that the lights go out on and that we keep the head of paper in the drawers and there's envelopes. Look after all that. That's fine. We're not going to interfere with any of that. Make sure that people continue to receive, social welfare payments as normal, that tax collection works as normal, etc. But there's that little bit where Fianna Fáil always said, but we've got to look after the following people in the following ways, and that's what we're going to do, and we'll point to it at the end. And either they do it or they don't do it. Now, of course, you're going to tell me, how can you romanticize the wonderful world of Fianna Fáil? After all, the famous look what they did to the country phrase. I mean, the thing is that I'm talking about this in a political sense. If you have the same party in government decade after decade, it isn't the same party at the end of it that it was at the start.
Yeah.
Because what's happened is that everybody has joined it in order to get into government. Mm. That if you wanted to get into government, that's what you do.
Yeah.
And that wasn't its original impulse, let's say. But I think that what you have is you're going to have you have competent people put in ministries. Does that look like a recipe for disaster? Doesn't really sound like a recipe for disaster. And although I was grumbling there about the kind of ideas that come out of the civil service, and if you leave it on autopilot, that it perhaps isn't exactly what the population wants, we actually do have a lot of buried competence in the civil service. I mean, you saw that, I think, best with the Brexit business.
Yep.
If you think Ivy House is going to drop the ball on Brexit in the second go because they have a different spokesminister, forget it. That thing is going to work regardless. Mm.
And it doesn't really matter who's the guy in the suit. It doesn't really matter.
No, we'd like smooth people rather than unsmooth people. But, it really doesn't matter. You're quite right. We've never put in an incompetent into foreign affairs either.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that we say, we're small, we have to look outside our own walls, we've got to make sure we're okay. And it's critical in terms of relationship with the EU, and now more than ever.
Can we go to the dog that didn't bark, the climate that never happened? We've continued to bang the drum in here. We only this morning put out a podcast with Not Here, Not Anywhere. We are trying to make sure that we understand that even if it's not the issue now, it should bloody well be the issue in a programme for government. And yet, It's not...
So look, here's the thing. If you're running an election, the election is about how you're going to solve the things that are in front of people in their lives now. Mm. That's, of course, what Fine Gael didn't try and do. They ran an election telling them about Brexit or something. I don't know. In the general tone of Fine Gael has been 83 years of people waiting to admit that the electorate was wrong and that they'll see the error of their ways. I mean, that's the general.
But they're not
tone.
Unique in that.
No, they're not unique in that. There've been loads of people feeling that way. And they don't even ever get a chance to go into government, and they sit there with their arms folded, meeting their purity tests, saying, "Well, I mean, you'll all agree with me in the end. You'll see." The question of climate is that if you're trying to run a campaign dealing with people's lived experiences. People haven't lived crises in climate yet.
Hmm.
And it's an incredibly difficult problem to try and address. I mean, you know, it gnaws at me. But at the same time, it also doesn't really affect me on a day-to-day basis in any way.
Hmm. I think that's the key to it. People want to see action on climate, but they're going, I want to see action on climate. Government, you take care of that. Come back to me when you've sorted that out. Now, to a degree, they're absolutely right. They're absolutely right. Because nothing you can do with plastic straws, keep cups, none of that works. You're a spectator. You're watching the bigger game.
Of course it has an impact.
It doesn't. It does not have an impact. You're not going to change anything.
Something is better than nothing.
Yes.
So I'm a very gradual kind of creature. Something's better than nothing. But the problem is, this isn't a problem that can respond effectively long term to gradual solutions. Like, that's my worry. And we've a system which, when it works well, produces gradual improvements over time. That's the system working well.
What do you want? Gradual improvement?
I want gradual improvement. When do you want it? Shortly.
Incrementally.
In a while. So, so when it's working well, we have a system and a society that enjoys gradually improving things over time. And our difficulty is that we have a problem which requires radical changes before we see the problem.
Hmm.
People don't like noticing that the weather seems to be different over the last few years.
Hmm.
They don't like it. They know that's wrong. But on the other hand, like, when it's warm, it's nice.
You get to wear a t-shirt in January.
It's sunny, it's nice. These are very basic impulses that you're dealing with. I don't know. I just feel that to make climate a political issue requires astonishing levels of happy circumstance. So, for example, the Greens did very well in the local elections, extremely well. And they did very well in age brackets, which were basically not just young, but the reason they did very well was that they got a block of 35 to 45.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, 25 to 45, that kind of block.
They have, and this is, it's not particular to Ireland. It also happened in the UK election. They've plateaued. And they've plateaued, and they should be making much bigger gains than they are.
But what is the shoulds? Like, this comes down to where are you running candidates? What candidates are you running, and what kind of oomph do they have behind them to give them a lift? I mean, clearly, I'd love to see Saoirse McHugh win out in Mayo over some fella who was working for the Mayo football team previously. Do you know what I mean? That's what it is.
Hmm.
I mean, and the comedy would be she'd be taking Endicenny's old seat.
Yeah.
Like, that would be the comedy. And that would be magic. It could have happened if there'd been a great big green surge, but at the best of times. The problem is that the Greens represent a slice of these psychological types, these social types, which is still narrow.
Mm.
And the reason Saoirse stands out so much, and one or two other candidates, is that she steps outside that. And immediately this is treated as an astonishing thing.
Yeah.
Why are you not supporting the party line? Yes. I don't know what.
My leader.
You said something that sounded like a normal person speaking.
That's right. How kind of normal person comes on and runs for election? That's like weird. That is some mad stuff. While that's still the response, and while that's people's vision of what the Greens are, without broadening it out to take in more parts of society, you have a natural cap.
I think there is a willing group of listeners, quite ready to take on board their message, quite ready to work it into any government policy. See, I'm always reminded of something you told us a while back, that power doesn't listen to reason. Power only listens to power.
And that's the moment when power ceases to exist in every other place other than the voter, because, and that's why the politicians can all say what they feel, and that's why everybody walks around going, you know, you get journalists suddenly going, well, I've no idea how it's going to turn out. It'll be all to play for. Who knows? Who knows? When suddenly they, you know, and after weeks of saying, it's very clear that what we're going to see now is, who knows what we're going to see? I don't.
Well, what I do, and to finish it up, what I do like best is there was a narrative, we'll call it mainstream, for want of a better word, we'll call it a mainstream narrative, that this was a changing of the guard, you're going to have Fianna Fáil in, Fine Gael out, we're predicting.
It wasn't even that, it was a presidential election.
Election, yeah.
It was Leo versus Micheál, and we were actually flagged that from a long way out.
I don't think either of them mattered in
no,
the end.
No, but we said this, and we were mad. We are mad. I'm not.
Not on this particular topic.
Yes, but I'm really glad that we have called it. Oh, all along. Stop. All along.
I have not called it. Like, I did know that people wanted to change things. I didn't think it would end up with Sinn Féin. In retrospect, sure, that makes sense. There you are. I wouldn't pretend that I was knowing what I was going to say. I did think the Greens were going to have their day.
Yeah.
I thought this was the Greens were going to have their day.
Next election.
No, I don't know. Might be very transfer friendly.
That's 5 years, though.
I know.
We only have 10 years. That's half the game.
I had this argument a while back.
We really need to do things. Yeah, and no, they're the more important ones.
You have two elections.
Oh my God.
Two elections.
Stop. And so look, I'm going to relax about it, but that's it. So look, so those are the things. The things that I was kind of wanting to say was that I thought weren't getting addressed was that one, voters have made a conscious and sophisticated choice. And we're going to hear, I would say, another 4 days of people who don't even understand what choice they've made talking about that choice without understanding it. So you're going to get Fine Gael warning about, Venezuela yesterday. Who knows?
Like, Trump.
Know. What's that? Oh, yeah, warning about Trump taking over if Sinn Féin. I don't know what that is. So you're just going to, that's mine. You might as well just do armpit farts if that's your argument.
Well, it's panic
if
mode.
That's the
it's
argument, it's just mode. Like, I don't know. So that's just noise. And then you're going to get complaints that, this is incoherent on the other side. It doesn't fit together. We need as a strong government. Any government that ends up taking power is a strong government because it has all the machinery of government. That doesn't really make sense. What I think that as a voter, and here I am just as a voter, sort of gnawing on a fingernail, what I think as a voter I would do, and I think that this is one of those places, times where people have decided I'm going to have a change and they're going to pull the lever for whatever the change is. I suppose if that change is to be given some effect, asterisk effect yet to be determined, I think probably it has to be clear that you have to go and look at your ballot paper and you can't just mark number one and a plague in all the rest of your houses.
No.
Because there just aren't enough candidates to make a difference. And if you want to change as a voter, something's got to give. And I would say you've got to say my number one is X. My second preference, this is an idea we have easily here. This is how our system works. Vote for the people that you like in order of preference. So if you're choosing someone as your fourth person on your volleyball team or your they're not the best. You acknowledge that. You have three other people you'd hope would get ahead of them. But if you carry on down, you'll get more of your feelings, your complicated personal relationship with the world reflected. And that's really important for voters, but it's also really important for an electoral system that relies on voters to remain engaged. We are still a very engaged political system, and it's that voting system of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, all the way down to 32 sometimes, which allows us to remain engaged because our preferences, not just our only choice, but our preferences can be reflected in the outcome. So, grumble about, lots of parties and it being very difficult. But I mean, that just means it's difficult to write articles about it. It doesn't mean it's difficult to run the country. That's a inside baseball complaint. The real thing is, if people want something to change, they have loads of choices. Not just one. I mean, Sinn Féin is definitely currently the leading choice. And that's what people seem to be going for. But there are loads of choices, and if that doesn't feel right to you, it doesn't still leave you with just Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. choose in order of your preference, and it really makes a difference.
Simon, thank you so much for coming in and going total anorak with two more total anoraks.
It's dreadful. I hope you cut out that middle bit where I'm talking. Just do the beginning and end.
Listen, folks, we've been putting these pods together, and I mean, we have been working our asses off. And in particular, look, credit to Tony. Tony does all the editing because I live miles away from here, so I just jump in the car and I go home. So Tony has really been putting the effort in. It's costing us an arm and a leg. So please join up, become a patron. Hold on. Simon wants one last word.
No, I want to say that I signed up a long time ago, long before, just as a listener, when you could barely listen to the audio quality, because not only this lovely, I mean, you should see this velvet lined palace that they have us in here. But I signed up because you have produced a podcast where you hear from people that you never hear from before, me not included. And I mean, the one with, and I'm kicking myself now, but you hear voices telling stories. You hear about experiences that you hear nowhere else. And it is invaluable. And invaluable doesn't mean for free. And I would put my money where you're... Like, if you were a magazine, I'd pay for a subscription. And what you are is you're a service to the community. And I merrily would subscribe. I subscribe. I suggest you subscribe 10 euros plus VAT. Imagine it like that. No. Because if you go off and you buy Monocle magazine, which is just a madness, you're paying like 8 or 9 euros for something like that. And you'd give you 20 minutes of staring at people's luggage that costs 3,000 euros. This is actually socially valuable. And for the price once a month of like 10 euros plus VAT, which is 12 euros, that's real value that you get out of that. So I really would say that I signed up early.
You did.
Yeah. And at the same time, you know, I really think that you get more value out of that sign up than any other form of signing up or subscription that I've ever encountered in Irish media. So thanks a lot, guys, for all that work.
Thank you for saying that, Simon.
Appreciate it. Talk to you all soon, folks. Take care. Bye-bye.